come to order now. Douglas, will you please call the roll?
Chair Altman, Vice Chair Bell.
Here.
Ranking Member Chambliss.
Here.
Members Abbott.
Here.
Black.
Here.
Botana.
Here.
Buchanan.
Here.
Cassell.
Here.
Cross.
Here.
Gossett Seidman.
Here.
Hart.
Here.
Kilbrew.
Yes, sir.
Lopez.
Here.
Overdorf.
Here.
Trunow.
Here.
Chair, we have a quorum.
Okay, a quorum is present. Being present, I want to welcome everyone to the Agriculture and Natural Resource Appropriations Committee. Please make sure that all cell phones and other communication devices are turned off and are silenced. If members of the public wishing to address the subcommittee will please fill out an appearance form and give to the committee administrative assistant. So good afternoon, members. We have several bills on the agenda today. Before we begin, are there any questions or comments? Okay, let's move to the first bill. It's CS House Bill 873, Dangerous Dogs, by the Local Administration, Federal Affairs, and Special District Subcommittee, and Rep. Payne.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members. Thank you for hearing this bill this afternoon. Members, House Bill 873, Dangerous Dogs, imposes requirements on dangerous dogs, and I'll repeat, dangerous dogs, owners for repeated attacks by their pets and other human pets or other pets. These revisions are modeled after those successfully implemented in other states, such as Virginia. So let me back up a little bit. This issue was brought to me August of last year. And I woke up and read the paper, and I was horrified by a postal worker who was attacked by dangerous dogs, severely attacked, and she passed away the next day. The details of the occurrence were very gruesome, and you'll hear some testimony from family today to the extent, perhaps not the extent of injuries, but some things that happened in that course. You know, regardless, the attack happened, ambulance services arrived, she was life-flighted to a local hospital in Gainesville, and a special team of doctors worked on her for 24 hours, and despite that, she still passed away the next day. So this good bill establishes a searchable online database of dogs throughout the state which have been declared dangerous by local authorities. It also requires that a dog owner has knowledge, if they have knowledge of their dog's dangerous propensities, must secure or confine the dog in a proper enclosure. Proper enclosure includes a locked, fenced yard, suitable to prevent the entry of children or others that may get in there and prevent the dogs from escaping. At least 42 states have laws related to dangerous dogs and violations associated with ownership. Virginia and Pennsylvania require dangerous dogs owners to register their dogs with their state's online dog registry. Colorado, Oregon, and Pennsylvania have criminal penalties for harboring and maintaining dangerous dogs. So this event occurred in my district, in a small rural town that is in my county. And so I felt compelled to bring the bill along with Senator Collins, who has family members of the deceased living in his district. So that's the bill, Chair.
Thank you very much. Do we have any questions on the bill? Yes. Ranking Member Chambliss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon. Recently, I think last session, we had a bill about pit bulls and their classification. And so if at any, this particular bill would affect the implementation of that bill, could you kind of explain, again, if it doesn't, that's also, you know, good question, but that's the first thing that came to my mind was, are these bills, you know, in pattern with each other, or are they potentially in conflict?
Thank you. Thank you for the question. Yeah, the bills are compatible. Underneath the existing statute, it does not specify dogs, type of dogs, sizes, and so we're just adding to that statute with these provisions. So it is compatible. Yep.
See any other questions? We do have members of the public that would like to testify. First is Fred Rock. He wishes to appear in person. And you have You have something you'd like for us to pass out?
Yes.
Okay, we'll do that.
I'll wait till you do that. By the way, this is Fred. I'm Dick. There are a lot of brothers. There are a lot of brothers in the family. So
there's 10.
Okay, good.
4 girls.
All right.
Pammy was the baby.
Pammy was the baby.
Wow.
Yes.
You can go ahead and proceed.
Thank you very much. My name is Dick Rock, and I am joined by Fred. We are tasked to present something that is very, very powerful to us. So, good afternoon, subcommittee members and fellow citizens behind me, and fellow victims of dog violence. Fred is from the Tampa area, and he's recently moved. My wife, Mary, is with us today, and we live in Gainesville, Virginia, which is about 45 minutes west of Washington, D.C. Monday, Mary and I, plus 8 other members of the ROC delegation, spent the day at the U.S. Capitol with Congressman Aaron Bean as he advanced and passed a federal bill on the House floor to name the post office in Melrose, Florida, Pam's hometown, the Pamela Jane Rock Post Office Building. So we were very, very pleased with that action, and it's my opportunity to explain to you what this meant to our family. And our single request is to approve as written all changes to the Florida Dangerous Dog legislation, as explained by this gentleman. The proposed changes would remedy the outdated Florida statutes by preventing or deterring irresponsible owners from ignoring dangerous dog activities and on human beings and their pets. And if it didn't deter, it would then impose specific requirements on dangerous dog owners for the unacceptable behavior of their pets in attacks on humans or pets. The revisions, as we learned, are modeled after those in the state of Virginia. We have contacts in the state of Virginia that helped us discuss this and get this underway, and we're very pleased for that assistance. But I want to say what this bill does not do is seek to ban breeds of dogs or anything like that. What it tries to do is only deal with the behavior of the dog as a potential threat. Let me tell you about my sister, Pam. She dedicated herself to a life of service. She was the youngest of the Rock family of 14 children. Poor kid. And she was a 1985 graduate of the University of Florida. She loved the University of Florida. She was in the marching band, and she played the trumpet, and she loved it. She always, whenever there was an opportunity to go and watch a game, she was there. She showed her commitment to others right off the bat. She when she graduated from Florida, she went became in the Women's, Infants, and Children program, and she volunteered for 3 years in Guatemala with the Peace Corps. Then she came back home and went out to the West, worked with Native American Indian tribes, and then returned to the East Coast and worked in North Carolina, Georgia, and Florida. She was also actually an advocate for WIC on the Capitol Hill, several sessions. She decided to go to the post office in 2021 and was stationed in with a rural route in Putnam County, Florida. We talked a little bit about that particular event itself on the 21st. She was delivering mail on foot, and she was attacked. She was brutally attacked, so brutally that the owner and the neighbor could not separate her from the dogs. She was airlifted by the EMT. The EMT got to work right away, but then she was airlifted to the hospital in the University of Florida. Then she unfortunately succumbed to her wounds on August 22nd, 2022, the next day. Pam's death was no accident or a case of just being in the wrong place at the wrong time. This particular pack of dogs had a long history with the sheriff and animal control offices. Four reports of aggressive behavior, including one victim 6 months before Pam was attacked. This victim had 200 stitches after he was hospitalized. On May 20, as if this wasn't bad enough, on May 26, 2023, an 86-year-old U.S. Army veteran, Geraldine Bishop, in Putnam County, was savagely attacked in her own yard by pets from across the street, pets that she knew, people that she knew. She barely survived. This happened less than a year after Pam's death, and it happened in Putnam County. Multiple injuries, loss of a leg, throat injury. She and her family are really strapped, and she continues to adjust to her injuries right now. Members of the subcommittee, Pam was a beautiful person in every way. Her life was cut short by five dangerous dogs. You have the power to change this. Please approve this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, and thank you for taking the time to come here. I'm so sorry for your loss. I'm so sad that it had to come to this, but we
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Want to keep you and your family in our thoughts and prayers, and
thank you.
And the memory of Pam. What a remarkable young lady she was.
Thank you.
Poor Gator, and we thank you for your time and your testimony. Do we have any questions? I think we do.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative.
May I say something?
Oh, Fred.
Yes.
Excuse me.
I want to thank you for not just allowing us here, but for having a type of a solution that hopefully or really shouldn't have even had to be in place, but it is. And it's been a godsend for lots and lots of people. This decision that eventually you are going to vote on today doesn't just make life better for the Rock family. Thousands and thousands of potential victims out there could benefit by this particular bill. So thank you for the opportunity to decide this for not just us, but for everyone else.
Thank you. We certainly want to thank Chair Payne for bringing this bill to us too. So we have Richard Rock. You're Richard. We have a card for you. Great. Thank you. Mary Rock, you wave in support, thank you. Stephanie Walker.
Hi, members of the subcommittee. Thank you for allowing me to speak. I'm Stephanie Walker, and I was mauled nearly to death on October the 12th, 2022, by a dog I rescued from Miami-Dade Animal Services.
You might want to pull your mic down just a little bit. We can hear you, but we want to make sure we...
That better?
Better, yeah.
Okay. I spent years volunteering at the SPCA in Lakeland, Florida. This not only fed my love for dogs, but it also jaded my heart when it came to euthanizing dogs. Thinking I could do better, I eventually turned my 40-acre ranch in Hamilton County, Florida, into a 501c3 nonprofit animal rescue. As the founder of Red Barn Ranch, I took in dogs from high-kill shelters like Miami-Dade and Palm Beach County. Dogs with severe injuries, high anxiety, or behavior issues that are deemed rescue only and not allowed to be adopted by the public. Networkers advertise these dogs to rescues and gather pledge money to encourage rescues to take these dogs. The rescue assumes the responsibility and the cost of training or rehabilitating these dogs. Unbeknownst to me, the dog I rescued had a bite history. This dog wouldn't allow me to touch him. He was the scariest dog I have ever come in contact with. This dog was not rehabilitatable. An aggressive dog isn't. I did not euthanize this dog because an adopter had wanted him, but he was too dangerous, in my opinion. After 3 weeks, I thought I was making progress as he was no longer growling at me whenever he saw me. I made the mistake of walking him at midnight because I had been gone most of the day. I had been down to Palm Beach County to pick up 4 other dogs, and I had a load of calves that I'd picked up in Okeechobee. I grabbed my leash and a flashlight, and I walked into his kennel. I put the leash on him, and we walked out of his kennel, and he began growling at me instantly. We stepped outside the building, and he attacked me. He latched hold of my right arm, as you can see, and he kept biting it. The leash was in my left hand, and I tried as hard as I could to choke this dog. I was not physically able. This dog weighed about 75 pounds, and he had a rather large neck. Despite my efforts, he eventually got hold of my left arm. I tried very hard to preserve it, but I wasn't able to. He went back to my right arm. I eventually heard my arm break. The next thing I felt was him bite my thigh. At that point, I was desperate for a way to survive. No one should ever have to fight a dog for their life. I thought back as to how I was going to survive, and I remembered when my children were small, we used to watch Animal Planet. And they often talked about how some dogs, or not dogs specifically, but animals you can fight for survival, and others you have to play dead. Well, fighting and screaming wasn't working. So the only way I was able to escape him was by playing dead in a trench that we had dug for power to run to the farm. My phone was missing. I was bleeding profusely. It was pouring rain. I was all alone. And I had no idea where this dog was. I stayed crouched in the trench. It was 18 inches wide and 32 inches deep. And I stayed there until I could no longer feel my limbs. I was balled up in a fetal position to hide my face. I was fearful that he was going to grab my hair. It was up in a ponytail in the back of my head. I did not want to be scalped. And at some particular point, with no perception of time, I realized that I needed to get out of the trench. So I walked out. The flashlight that I had had been dropped beside the building, which was just a few feet away from me, but it was so high-powered that I couldn't see behind it. And on the other side of it was the front of the building where all my cattle was. And to my left was the road. It was 250 feet to the road. I know that because that was how much conduit it took to run the power. Since I didn't know where the dog was, terrified, and when you're traumatized, your mind does not work. You're just in a fog. So I decided to walk to the road because there was passing cars despite the fact that it was the middle of the night. And when I got out to the road, I knew that there was a house roughly 1,000 feet away. But I saw something in the road and I thought it was deer. A car came and I thought, I'll just stand here in the middle of the road. Surely they'll stop. The car didn't stop. And I realized that that was not deer in the road. It was the dog that had attacked me. He was just frolicking in the road with another dog. I was terrified. I drew my arms in and the dog came up to me and he sniffed me. And they just kept going off into the woods. So I immediately turned around and went back to my barn. I only had 3 working fingers. This hand was completely disabled. So I took the 3 fingers that I had and I opened the barn door. And when I say barn, it was a metal building with like mobile home doors. I was able to get inside, close the door. And I cried and I screamed and I prayed. I found me some water and a small flashlight that my daughter had kept in the barn. And I turned on the tap and I laid down and I cried and I screamed. And then at 5 a.m., the alarm clock went off on my phone. I had to go find it. I crawled on the floor until I found it. And I took my finger and I swiped it and I dialed 911. And the EMTs, I walked them through as to where to find the property. I didn't live on the property. It was just simply a ranch. So they pinged my phone, found me. And they took me by ambulance to Valdosta because that was the closest hospital. And she felt like that I needed blood more than anything else. Valdosta immediately...
We have a very lengthy agenda ahead of us. So we want to... This is really interesting. I don't want to stop you, but we have a time constraint.
Okay. So what I want to say is that this bill is so important on so many levels. Aggressive dogs will always be aggressive, and an unknown trigger will always set it off, and it cannot be predicted. The registry is important to the innocent public safety. Too many people are unaware of statistics regarding dog attacks. On average, 1 person dies per week in the United States. These attacks are often not reported. Causes of death are usually not reported. And so the media doesn't report them. People are unaware of exactly what goes on. And not only that, but the public can be very cruel when it comes to dogs. They often value a dog's life more than a human's. They always feel like the human did something that caused the dog attack. And that very often is not the case. Aggressive dogs, sadly, need to be euthanized. And yes, this registry will definitely help them. It will make the owner responsible for the dog. But there will also be dogs that have to be turned over to the county. And the county will have to deal with those dogs. They cannot be turned back out into the public. And so often what happens is if someone is afraid of their own dog, they take it to their vet. The vet doesn't want to euthanize what they deem a healthy dog, but an aggressive dog isn't healthy. Not healthy mentally, and it isn't healthy physically.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Your story is so riveting, and you do a wonderful job of communicating it.
Thank you for your time.
You should record it, write it down for prosperity.
Because I have. Thank you.
Good. It's good. Okay. That's the last speaker. Is there any debate? I see. Yes. Oh, you have a question. Okay. Represent Kilbrew. Yeah. Just a couple of them. We need your mic. Yeah, sorry.
Apologize. Okay. Thank you, Chair. Does the bill relate to dog-on-dog attacks somehow? Is there something in there, in that bill that, you know, not dog fighting, we understand that, but neighbor's dog and a neighbor's dog, is there anything in there that would have an effect on
Chair, that? Chair, thank you. Yeah, it does. In fact, and I did a very short opening and probably did a pretty bad job because I wanted testimony to cover a lot of what was in the bill. It does a repeated attacks on neighbors' dogs, killing other dogs. That helps stipulate whether it's a dangerous dog, but more certainly when it attacks a human.
Sure. So. One more question.
Yes, yes.
Does it have any effect on animal control? It's something that they're doing or not doing or whatever?
It's a good question. In fact, in this case, I called the state's attorney, the sheriff, the county, animal control. Animal control had shown up on the previous events and said there was not a dire need to remove these dogs. The problem was the owner of the dogs was an impoverished, older, disabled gentleman who had acquired the dogs and could not keep them in his pen. And so there were no charges. And ultimately, animal control will have some responsibility if they're deemed a dangerous dog. They're part of the deeming of the dangerous dog process, and they will take control of the dog. If you read through the bill, it's a very short bill. It's very well, laid out for that.
Thank you. Thank you, Member Chambliss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll try to be brief. I do thank you for this good bill. I have known, people who have owned dogs and they've let them off the leash to roam, or the dogs are in places where, they're not enclosed, and young children have been the victims. I think from my recollection, children as young as two. I do think that this is an important step. Also, the registry, I like that because when you're moving into a community or a neighborhood, it would be good be able to, as you're looking at the schools, you're looking at the crime rate, to potentially also have access to this information. So again, I thank you for this good bill. I think it is very needed. And again, I just want to thank the families that have come and testified. Your testimony was compelling and moving. We are so sorry for your loss and or your injury. And we'll keep you in our prayers. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any other debate? Anyone, I want to thank the family and the citizen who has given us their testimony. You know, our role as an appropriation committee is to understand the need to appropriate funds if we have to. And this testimony really highlights whatever fiscal we need to address to make this happen, we need to do it. The public safety is at, public safety is our number one priority. And so this is a bill that I support, we need support, as well appropriating whatever resources we have to make sure it's implemented. And Chairman Payne, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Chair. If you'll give me the liberty just to make a few more comments. Certainly worked with Congressman Aaron Bean to make sure that we get a facility named after the Rock family. A couple important things. There's a Rock family is not after restitution. They're after making sure that this doesn't happen to somebody else. In saying that, we want to recognize Pam Rock by naming the post office after her, which is part of a congressional bill you're seeing move through now. Also want to mention that the dog registry is important because often dogs can be adopted from a shelter to a family. Family recognizes the dog is dangerous. It goes back to the shelter. It's then adopted by another family. And there's always the potential repeatedly of that dog attacking someone. I think you mentioned underfunding or lack of funding. So a lot of rural shelters are no-kill shelters. They're underfunded, without a doubt. They're difficult to manage when they're underfunded. That's why I run a bill for several years to put an animal shelter in our facility. Unfortunately, a better animal shelter is a little bit late. But I think I've met with a lot of people. I know that this is more of a pervasive issue than what we realize. And the number of dog attacks in Florida are up and throughout the country. So with the provisions in this bill, I think we'll have a good step on a statute that already exists. It's a good statute. It will tighten up some of those structures. And if nothing else, having a registry and having this bill named after Pam Rock as the Pam Rock Act is very important to me and the family. So thank you for that. I close.
Thank you. Representative Payne, having closed on the bill, Douglas, please call the roll.
Chair Altman?
Yes.
Vice Chair Bell?
Yes.
Ranking Member Chambliss?
Yes.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Black?
Yes.
Botana?
Yes.
Buchanan?
Yes.
Cassell?
Yes.
Cross?
Yes.
Gossett Seiden?
Yes.
Hart?
Yes.
Killebrew?
Yes, sir.
Lopez?
Yes.
Overdorff?
Yes, sir.
Trunau?
Yes.
That is 15 yeas, 0 nays.
Thank you. Members, by your vote, Committee Substitute for House Bill 873 will be reported favorably.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members.
Thank you for this good bill. Next up is Committee Substitute for House Bill 789, Environmental Management by Water Quality Supply and Treatment Subcommittee, and Representative Overdorff.
Thank you, Chairman. Today I'll be presenting House Bill 789, and we recently had this in another committee where we received unanimous support, as well as the support of a variety of other organizations that are really too numerous to name. However, what we found in that was that these folks came across the board from a variety of different industries and found common ground here. The bill does basically two things. Number one, it standardizes the stormwater design requirements for residential and municipal stormwater ponds. And it's second, it actually gives some language now and some clarification as to cleanup target levels and the causes of action associated if you go ahead and you follow your permit. There are no fiscal impacts associated with this, so that is the bill.
We have no amendments on the bill. Are there any questions? Representative Hart and Representative Cross.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Both at once or one at a time?
Yeah.
We're going together. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Rep, I did see this bill in water quality, and this bill is not what I anticipated it was, but I'd like you to explain to me, can you explain to me the meaning of strict liability for those of us who are not lawyers?
So, Mr. Chairman, I understand that are we going to be going ahead and talking about policy within this, or are we talking
about...
We
will, to a point. You can answer that question.
Okay.
Well, remind the members, we're here on the fiscal issues, but
okay.
It's hard to separate policy from that, but go ahead.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. So as you go through on the strict liability side, it is actually cited in a variety of different spots here, and the strict liability meaning that we're dealing specifically with four things, if you will: an act of God, war, and an outside person who is acting in a way that is not prescribed within the permit, and being able to actually prove that as well. And it's actually stated also within the Florida statutes.
I'll come back.
I can pull that up if you need me to.
Representative Cross.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So referencing the committee that this was in before, water supply treatment, you had explained that the intent of this was related to brownfields rehabilitation, and that if someone was complying with all their permit conditions, they could not be, you know, sued for doing what they were supposed to do to rehabilitate a brownfields site. Is this section of the bill strictly limited to brownfields rehabilitation?
Again, I didn't realize we're getting into policy discussions in this. However, that's fine. This actually, it's all cited within lines 45 through 55. In dealing with those specific chapters, it does deal with dry cleaning solvents. It deals with brownfields. It deals with overall cleanup target levels that are associated with DEP permits. So anytime you're doing a cleanup site, and you're actually following the protocols associated with that, as I related before, that you should not then be held liable for, say, personal injuries associated with following a permit.
ballot, Mr. Chair. So looking at the money side of this in this Appropriations Committee, the way I have read this section, you do include a new reference to the Brownfields chapter, which is 376.82. The way I understand that chapter, there's already protection for a person or a corporation that successfully completes a Brownfield site rehabilitation agreement. But there are other chapters that are referenced in here that makes me believe that this could apply in other conditions. In 2021, there was a massive spill of 215 million gallons of polluted water from the Piney Point phosphate facility that were dumped into Tampa Bay. Now, that is a place that, since it was constructed in 1966, has had a horrible record. There's been several bankruptcies. I believe there's been 5 ownership changes, 5 emergency discharges of polluted toxic water into
Tampa Bay. Is there a question?
There will be. And 3 deaths at the facility. Currently, or when that spill happened, there was no responsible party, no solvent entity. It was really under the management of the state. Let's say that was under a corporation that did still have money in the bank. What would someone be able to bring a lawsuit forward in the case of that Piney Point spill right now? And how would that change under this section, if it goes forward as written?
I think that you have a large hypothetical in that situation, number one. Number two, if they are following the permit, which I think there were some, and I am not as familiar with Piney Point as you are, I believe that there were some issues associated with what was being done at that facility. If they are following the permit, if they are in all the guidelines of that permit, a personal injury case would not be able to be brought against that. If, in fact, it's proven that they were not following the permit, they were not doing the things that are prescribed under that, then, in fact, there would be the ability to bring an issue forward at that point in time.
One last follow-up. Would someone be able to bring a suit for economic damages related to loss of income if the ecosystem was impacted such that a fisherman or a crabber was not able to make their livelihood because the natural resources that they depended on were destroyed?
So I think the case that you're referring to there is Curd versus Mosaic in that specific case. And so I think that if you'd like to look at the ruling associated with that, there was an alleged claim for a statutory liability. There was an alleged common law strict liability based upon damages resulting from an activity, and there was also an alleged claim of negligence. The court did not believe the legislature intended for the courts to use the expansive method of measures recoverable damages under the state. The court also held the fishermen cannot state a claim in negligence for strict liability to recover for a pure economic loss unrelated to injuries to their persons or their property. In other words, they also did not live there in that area. They did not own that land, so they could not bring that economic damages forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative. I was also in the committee where we previously heard this bill. I just have some questions with regards to the existing statute as it pertains to liability protections for brownfields. We already have an existing statute in place. So why are you including brownfields in this legislation?
So when you look at the LIEPO versus Simon's Trucking is the case I think that now you're referring to here, and why we're here today is a lot of it. In that, the court really determined that the legislature was silent, if you will, as to overall damages and what damages meant in the context of this particular section of the statutes. And so what they asked for, and what at least one of the judges was asking for, was clarification. That's why we're here today, is giving that clarification that, once again, if you follow the permit, I mean, why do we have permits? And why would we go ahead and follow a permit, put a permit in place, do all the things, do the monitoring, do all the expenses associated with it, do all the activity if, in fact, all you're going to do is turn around and be sued associated with the activity that you're doing. That's really what we're here for today, is to say that we have a permitting system that's been set up in a multitude of years by DEP. It's an independent party, if you will, to those that are there, that has been legislative, statutory authority for DEP to do this. If I'm doing exactly what the government has told me to do, and I'm following that 100%, then why am I going to be liable for additional charges and additional lawsuits associated with that? Why do we have permits at all? And that's really what this is speaking to, again, at the request of one of the judges in that case.
Okay, thank you. Very good answer. I want to bring it back. I want to try to focus on the appropriation side of things, because we could get into the weeds on the policy issue and the legal issue, but I think the presenter's done a really good job of responding to that component, those questions. Ranking Member Chambliss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, Representative Overdorf. I'm asking a question more to kind of get a better understanding. Obviously, there have been some entities that have brought up some concerns. So I have, my question is kind of like, I'm going to ask you kind of just break it down for me, you know, for the country boy in the room. I think one of the big concerns is, you know, that personal liability protection that someone might have. And so two questions, if I may, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
One, if the bill prevents them from going after the good actor, right? The good actor that followed all the laws and adhered to the permits. Would a better scenario potentially be for maybe that particular company to turn around and maybe even sue us because they did everything right? So would they be able to pass liability on to the people who issued the permit? Can you tell me how legally that could potentially be handled? And also, what is it now? Like, for example, are we saying that now they can go after physical liability, and so we're changing that? And tell me if my question didn't make any sense.
So to answer one of your first questions, if you can determine that, in fact, it's a frivolous lawsuit, then that would be an action that we could come back and actually go back to you as a frivolous lawsuit saying, look, we followed everything else. Why are you bringing this forward to us? That's one of the issues. And if you could repeat the second side.
Yeah, so again, was that answer, Mr. Chair?
So I'd actually remember, so the standard now and what we're asking for and the reason that we're here, again, goes back to the Simon's Trucking case where the judges were asking for clarification on what was the intent when we included the phrase all damages associated with the Water Quality Assurance Act, which was done previously. That then covered a variety of permits.
Okay. All right. I'm going to recognize Representative Trunell. He hasn't asked a question. Representative Trunell.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Overdorf, does this bill have a physical to the state of Florida?
No.
And that's consistent with the staff analysis. It's clear, none, no physical at all. Okay, do we have any other questions from someone who hasn't already asked a question? And I ask that it be tied specifically to the finding there's no fiscal or, you know, related to the fiscal impact.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When we talk about tying it to a physical, are we talking about financial remedies? Would that be money that I can ask a question around?
Well, as the Appropriation Committee, our role is to approve or disapprove a bill if there is a fiscal impact to our budget.
Ah.
If we can't fund that impact, or we choose not to fund it, we could deny a bill based on the fiscal impact, it's not in our budget, or we don't want to provide the money.
Okay.
Or we could approve a bill and support the appropriation. But, you know, it's a fine line a lot of times between policy and fiscal, so I'm I like to err on the side of public input and understanding and allow discussion, but I don't want us to get bogged down. Because I sit on judiciary. It'd be a great discussion to have on judiciary. So that's their role. Our role is to evaluate the fiscal impact. I think from what's been presented to us, that this bill will probably have a positive fiscal impact, because frivolous lawsuits are incredibly expensive. It's expensive to the state, expensive to local government and the private sector. And if we feel that if everyone's doing everything right, if they do everything we ask them to do in this permitting process, that it would relieve them from a frivolous lawsuit. And I think there's a strong argument here that this bill will have a positive fiscal and save our time and treasure here in the state that we could apply to our environmental resources. If there's liability, that's going to be found, and that will be litigated. Certainly, giving credit for an entity that's followed all our laws and permits should be done. And that would lead me to my question, too. So we passed this bill, and it's proven that the applicant or the contractor, whoever, filed every bit of the permit requirements and design requirements. But there was some other liability provision. They were liable for something that was beyond that. Would they not still be able to be held accountable and sued for that liability?
If you are outside the limits of the permit, you've done an activity that is outside the limits of what you are authorized to do, then yes, absolutely.
One last question.
So in the case that there are, you know, physical damages that are found to come up, and I know that we've talked a lot about the particular contractor or vendor. In this case, it creates for me the simple question of, okay, so if there are something that happens, that person, you know, did everything, they're not the target, then who does the person go to for to remedy that scenario, whether it be cancer or whether it be some other thing that might have been a product? Who do they go to say, okay, this happened to me, someone has to be held responsible?
And in your scenario, you're talking about outside, if an activity happened, Acme Corporation is doing something or other, and you believe that they were the cause of X, Y, or Z. Is that kind of where you're going with this? In that case, you would look at a permit review, and somebody brought up PFAS, for instance, okay? And we're seeing PFAS as an issue out there in a variety of settings. It's been used in a prescribed way. It's been part of a permitting activity, et cetera. It's actually worked very well in what they believed. Now we actually understand, and Stewart being a bellwether case associated with this, we found that the company that was producing it actually knew that the material was bad. And even though it was being used in a permitted way, okay, the material itself was bad, and therefore we can go back to that company and we can sue against that company. That company it was the one, the producer of it. We used it in a permitted way, but now they have a way to go back there. It's a negligence back on the PFAS makers, if you will.
Okay. All right, I think that's all the questions. Let's go to debate. Any debate on this? Army? Oh, yes, I'm sorry. I was so anxious to get to debate. We do have some cards. Carolyn Thompson, Florida Chamber. Adam Basford, Associated Industries of Florida.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Adam Basford with Associated Industries of Florida. Thank you for hearing this bill. It's a good one. And the reason I wanted to speak very briefly is to show the distinction between the goal of this is to prevent frivolous litigation and separating out the real and property damage versus bodily injury. And Rep. Chambliss, we speak country boy. We'll be able to follow up on that later. But it's pretty simple. It's separating those two things out. If the statute remains the same, there could be open-ended litigation forever on things that have already been cleaned up, already permits being made. There are plenty of avenues to sue for bodily injury if there's negligence or other things like that. We need to keep that in place. But as far as this statute goes, we need to make sure that real and personal property are different than bodily injury under this, especially when somebody has met all the conditions of their permit, done everything the right way. There shouldn't be open-ended litigation possibly for them in the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mara Hatfield.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Committee. This is an important bill, and it absolutely should not pass. I disagree in the interpretation of a lot of what Representative Overdorf explained to you about the case law and about the statute, so I want to just state right now on the record that I respectfully disagree, but I do disagree. I represent an area of Western Palm Beach County that is one of the few areas in the world to host a confirmed pediatric brain cancer cluster. Make no mistake about it, those personal injuries that those children have received, those that survived, are real damages. It is upsetting to hear bodily injury damages compared to real damages as though they are not. To touch briefly on the financial impact of these, in our cases that we are litigating currently, the liens from Medicaid, from Medicare, and from the health insurance companies that are seeking to get paid back monies paid in part by the state of Florida through Medicaid for caring for these injuries is in the millions of dollars. So this will have a financial impact. And it will have a financial impact because I am telling you now that the changes to this statute make it impossible to sue under this statute for bodily injury damages resulting from non-permitted, unlawful discharges. This section has always addressed only unlawful, prohibited discharges. It says right there in the statute that such person need only plead and prove the fact of the prohibited discharge. This is language with which I am familiar because this is what I practice, and I am telling you right now that Chapter 376.313 has always addressed personal injury damages, and it has always required me to prove whether I'm talking about real property, property value, personal property, the eyes, ears, throat, brain of the person that was actually injured by these often invisible chemicals. It has always required that I prove that the discharge was not within the bounds of a permit, or was unpermitted, or was through a permit that was obtained by fraud. The statute clearly says that. The statute clearly says that in the beginning of this section, and it reiterates it in the end of the section. Now, how the statute works is it says you can get damages, and it doesn't currently limit it to property only. You can get damages for actions, for discharges, or pollutive conditions covered by this act, and gives the section 376, the sections of 376 that apply, or authorized by Chapter 403. Chapter 403, as people who work in permitting facilities for a living, will tell you, Chapter 403 is where you get your permits. Chapter 376 deals with getting permits for hazardous waste cleanup. The people that I represent have children who got brain cancer in way too many numbers, numbers that defy randomness. There has to be a systematic cause. It took us 7 years to find that systematic cause. It was bad fill. Fill which was sent to a recycling facility because people committed fraud in their permit applications. Then they failed to follow the permits that they actually themselves wrote. And this soil containing hazardous and radioactive material wound up in their playgrounds. And what you all will enact today if you pass this bill is you will allow their parents to sue for the property damage of cleaning up the playground, but not for the brain cancers that brought it to their attention. Now, I understand licensing. I understand the question of, well, why do we have permits? Why do we have a driver's license? We have a driver's license that's accompanied by rules of the road. You run the stop sign. You're drunk, you run the stop sign. You run the stop sign because you were looking at your phone. Whatever it is, you run the stop sign. You got the license, you agreed to follow the stop sign. You run the stop sign, you hit a car, kid goes through the window. Are we gonna limit that person to the damages for the windshield and not the kid who went through it? Because that's what this does. Except for it's worse. Because this section always only gave a remedy to people who violated their own permit. So in my scenario, it's not a stop sign that somebody else put there. This idiot driver drove through their own stop sign. And we're gonna get them liability protection for the kid that they injured and not the windshield. It is a travesty. Now, if you are concerned—
We're running out of time, so okay. I should bring you in for a landing.
Sure. If you are concerned that this section is too ambiguous on what liability is, then fix the liability portion and don't touch the damages. The cleanup target levels that Representative Overdorf was telling you about are based on human studies regarding human organs. The damage this is meant to address is personal injury damages and not damage to real property. Finally, I think this is an appropriate analogy considering what we've been discussing today on the first bill. All of these laws are patterned after trespass. It's the oldest problem in civil actions. Someone has a bull, we require them, if they want to keep a hazardous animal like a bull, we require them to put up a fence. And if you don't put up the fence and the bull goes running out, they're liable for the rose garden that they tore up, sure, but more importantly, they're liable for the kid that they gored. Here, you're taking that away. Because somebody failed to keep their own hazardous materials inside the fences that they had permitted. And finally, in answer to your question, if I can prove that I followed my permit or I didn't follow my permit because it was impossible to follow, and so now I'm liable because I have an unlawful discharge, you know who you sue? Because you should be liable. You failed to follow your permit. You sue the professional who gave you that permit. That is malpractice.
Thank you. Thank you. Our next speaker is Laura Yeomans. We have a lot of bills here, we also have members that have to get back to committee too, so I.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, I'll be brief. I would like to echo the previous speaker's comments. I do believe this has a negative fiscal impact, though it may be de minimis, because what it would do is prevent private citizens from recovering damages. In most of these cases, the state has provided the Piney Point. Millions of dollars were provided to clean that up. So I think it is really important that we focus on the damages section because this is a place that allows individuals to make themselves whole. And I wanna go and kind of talk about the case law, and I wanna talk about the 2019 Supreme Court case in Simons and that construed. And I want you all to look at the bill with me, please, at line 49. It says all damages. This was a textualist Supreme Court decision. They construed all damages to mean all damages. So that was in the Simons case. They construed it to cover the physical harm done to the tow truck driver. It required 27 skin grafts. It goes back to capture the Mosaic case, the 2010 case, and it would construe all damages to incorporate lost income, the lost income of those fishermen. So what this bill does is it narrows all damages to very narrowly include real or personal property. So if this bill goes into place, you're receding from the 2019 decision, you're receding from the 2010 decision, you're narrowing damages, you're narrowing what the previous legislatures wrote in the law, but the courts have construed in the law to very clearly mean all damages. So this would eliminate the ability to recover lost income that was caused by pollution. This would eliminate the ability to recover for physical harm, those 27 skin grafts. So I just want to make sure that we really focus in on the damages portion and not focus so much on whether or not there's a cause of action. We agree that no cause of action lies if the permittee is operating within the scope of their permit. We believe that's the law now. We believe that the bill at lines 52 through 54 puts a belt and suspenders on that. That is completely consistent with the court's opinions and with the interpretation of this statute. But the all damages portion is where I would really just like for you all to focus in on. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay. That's all the cards that we have. Public testimony. Is there a debate? Representative Cross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Overdorf, I voted for this at the first committee stop, and it was really because of some language that was taken out of the bill, and I think that's the reason that some of the environmental groups did support it. And I did raise concerns about this section because I did think it was broader than you had stated the intent. And I do think that this is something that we do not want to wade into and that could have negative fiscal impacts for our state. I do think of the Piney Point example. Last year, we allocated, I believe, $100 million to the cleanup of that because cleanup and closure, because there was no responsible party. If there's not a responsible party or if someone is not able to sue for all damages from negligence, then that may be something that the state directly or indirectly would be responsible for. So I do think this could have negative impacts. The statement by one of the speakers that this is meant to reduce open-ended litigation on things that have already been cleaned up related to bodily injury. Again, I don't think that what is written is narrow in that respect. I do agree that if someone is cleaning up a brownfield and they are complying with their permit conditions, that when they're done with that, they should be done with that. And if that's what you really want to accomplish in this section of the bill, I would be happy to work with you on that. But I think it is much broader than this, and I think that it is going to severely limit the ability of people to be made whole if people are acting in unlawful or ways that are not permitted.
Representative Castell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. I also had an opportunity to see this bill at the last stop and was up on it. I think where my hesitation and why I will not be able to support your bill today is oftentimes when we talk about the law, you know, we want to talk about it so black and white that in this situation you can sue and in this situation you can't. And many times we see bills that come before the legislature that take away the gray. And the reality is where I operate as an attorney, it's gray. Facts are gray. The situation that the presenter spoke about, you know, that it took 7 years to figure out where this unlawful discharge came from. I can promise you, if you're one of those parents of one of those children that was impacted, you don't find it frivolous. And I get very frustrated with that term because as an attorney, there's a big difference between frivolous and meritless. And we all are well aware that the courts have the ability to get rid of meritless litigation, which is what I think you're concerned with. When we talk about frivolous is in the eye of the beholder and whether you think someone's case has value. And I get frustrated with that terminology because I think it's used improperly. The courts already have parameters in place to deal with meritless litigation. To call these scenarios or potential scenarios frivolous and as if we're just opening, you know, the floodgates to the courthouse, well, that's actually what the courthouse is there for. It's to provide people access when they're injured to get remedy. And when we try to put these situations into such black and white categories and leave out the gray, I know in the gray is oftentimes where the remedies are needed the most. So because of some of the concerns that have been raised, I know you to be a fantastic member, and I have no doubt of what your intent is. I just don't think the bill gets us to where your intent is. And I would be happy to work with you as well to make sure that we are ensuring that if you follow the proper permitting and you're doing everything above board the way you're supposed to, that we provide those liabilities. And I think when it comes to brownfields, we have existing legislation that already covers that. So I think we have a better way of getting there. I don't think this bill gets us there. I think this bill, doesn't take into account those gray situations, and for that, I'm going to be down.
Okay, is there any other debate? Representative Hart. And this bill does have another policy committee stop as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Buchanan.
Yes, I was in that committee, and yes, I voted up on this bill. I voted up on this bill because we asked a lot of questions, and the information I'm getting today is somewhat different than what I heard in my committee previously. It concerns me that if a pollution event causes me or my family to be permanently injured, I am barred from seeking any financial remedy. Well, we were told it's not for personal injury, it's for property. So he's shaking his head, but maybe I just don't understand it. But I'm gonna have to get a better understanding since you're shaking your head that I don't understand it. But for me, it sounds as if though we are not allowing people their opportunity to go to court when they have been harmed. And we saw this last year with PIP. We keep seeing it over and over. So for that, I'm down today, and I am looking forward to seeing where this bill does go. And I look forward to having that conversation with you so that I can better understand what you're saying, because right now it's completely different than what I understood last week.
Representative Buchanan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Overdorf, for the time earlier today. We didn't have a whole lot of time. This is the first opportunity I've had to see this bill. Most of the questions I had for you earlier were outside the scope of what we'd be discussing in this appropriations subcommittee here, although we'll have an opportunity as we move forward with infrastructure strategies ahead, of which I sit on. Most of my questions pertain to the Section 2 of the bill. I want to just make sure that the language that we have in the bill is, it's in fact going to accomplish what the goals are, that what your intent is. I also want to make sure I have a few additional questions around Section 2 that I just want to make sure I'm clear on. So I'll look forward to working with you before next stop and continuing that conversation.
Okay, seeing no other debate, Representative Overdorf, you are recognized to close on the bill.
So there's been a lot of interesting things said here today. First of all, to the committee, I was really prepared for all the fiscal questions. So as we get into a policy instead, that's fine. No problem. I look forward to having a discussion further on this with many of you that have some pretty serious misunderstandings about what is really in this bill. And I'm happy to be able to explain that to you as we move ahead. You know, there was just a couple of statements I have to address from some of the folks here. Do you really think that if there's radioactive soil that is full of contaminants spread in a playground, that somebody shouldn't be held liable for that? This bill doesn't stop that from happening. I mean, that's that comment alone should give you some idea. Do you really think that I'd be supporting a bill that allows for radioactive material to be spread on this playground somewhere and that you wouldn't be able to have a remedy for that? I mean, come on, you all know me. So there was another comment about an unlawful discharge. That answers your question. An unlawful discharge allows for you to take an action. This is about permitted activities, permitted abilities. Again, I go back to, why do we have permits in the first place if a person is completely liable for doing a permitted activity? That's what we're really boiled down to here in this particular section. I'm shocked we didn't have any questions about the side slopes, because I know all of you had a lot of questions about those, but that's a whole other issue. Look, I'm really open to talking and running through a lot of these items and questions that have come up today. Happy to do it. Happy to spend some time with all y'all along those lines. That's Southern for everyone. So love to talk to you all. Look forward to your support today from those, and look forward to working on this as we move forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Overdorf. And having closed on the bill, Douglas, please call the roll.
Chair Altman?
Yes.
Vice Chair Bell?
Yes.
Ranking Member Chambliss?
No.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Black?
Yes.
Botana?
Yes.
Buchanan?
Yes.
Cassell?
No.
Cross?
No.
Gossett-Seidman?
Yes.
Hart?
No.
Kilbrew?
Yes.
Lopez?
No.
And Overdorf?
Yes, sir.
Trunow? That's 10 yeas, zero, or...
Zero nays, five. Right. Yes,
sorry.
Exactly.
Five nays.
10-5, the bill passes. So, members, by your vote, Committee Substitute for House Bill 789 will be reported favorably. Thank you, Representative Overdorf. Our next item is Representative Tant, because she's got a committee to get to.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you all, Ranking Member, Mr. Chair, and our Vice Chair for taking up this bill. I'm very grateful. I am filing this bill on behalf of a constituent who's with me here today, Gloria Pugh, who
is House Bill
367. Yes, sir. And this bill is about moving services. I was unaware until my constituent made me aware that actually many times when you call for a mover, you're actually talking to a moving broker. What the moving broker then does is call a moving company that you are unaware of, sells them a contract. The moving company that they hire, that you think you've paid for, shows up at your door, loads your items into their truck, and then tells you you owe an additional fee. And then when you balk, they say, we've got your stuff. We're going to take it to a warehouse. You don't get your items back. So what this bill does is institute some measures of disclosure and clarity for the consumer by requiring moving brokers to disclose that they are moving brokers, by requiring that they also share that they do who their moving companies, the reputable registered moving companies are that they do business with, and that they are in fact different from a moving company. They also have to disclose what their fee is, different than what a moving fee is. They also have to show their license, keep their license displayed, et cetera. This is a consumer protection bill, and as far as the fiscal impact is concerned, there is no local government impact, and then there will be an small indeterminate impact to FDACs, but we think it'll be a positive in that closure of claims will happen faster due to the transparency requirements of this bill. With that, Mr. Chair and members, I ask for your favorable consideration.
Okay. Are there any questions? Seeing no questions, we have no amendments. We do have a couple of cards. Our first one is Jim Duncan, Professional Movers Association of Florida. Waves in support. Gloria Pugh, Professional Movers Association of Florida.
Thank you very much. My name is Gloria Pugh, and I'm the CEO of Amwite Moving Warehousing Storage, and I serve as chair of the Professional Movers Association of Florida. We represent Florida's moving industry since 1979. Representative Tant's House Bill 367 is the companion bill to Senator Hooper's Senate Bill 304. Chapter 507 FS Household Moving Services is in urgent need of revision. Specifically, the bill clarifies the definition of a moving broker. Currently, there is ambiguity in their responsibilities, with the statute implying restrictions but failing to explicitly prohibit moving brokers from preparing estimates and contracts. This leaves consumers vulnerable to exploitation. The bill seeks to address this issue by explicitly stating that only a registered moving company in Florida is authorized to prepare estimates and contracts. This crucial distinction ensures accountability and accuracy in service cost. The goal is to prevent situations where consumers are deceived into thinking the moving broker directly provides services, only to face unexpected demands from an unknown, often unregistered moving company on moving day. We firmly believe this amendment will serve as a deterrent, safeguarding consumers from deceptive practices. And there's a lot more to the bill that Representative Tant expressed, but this would be a consumer protection that the Florida movers industry that we support completely.
Thank you so much. Our next speaker, Karen Murillo, AARP. Wave and support, thank you. Deborah Mitchell, representing herself. Is Deborah here? She is a proponent of the bill. She's in favor. Agro-Endorf Umbretta. I don't think she... They are a proponent of the bill as well. Okay, that's all the cards. Are there any, any debate on the bill? Seeing no debate, Representative Tant, you recognize the close on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for taking me out of order. And also, the only thing I would say in closing is that we have 900 people a day moving to Florida, and we need to make sure that they are not hoodwinked. And so with that, I ask for your support.
Thank you. Okay, Representative Tant having to close on the bill. Douglas, please call the roll.
Chair Alton?
Yes.
Vice Chair Bell?
Yes.
Ranking Member Chambliss?
Yes.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Black?
Yes.
Botana?
Yes.
Buchanan?
Yes.
Cassell?
Yes.
Cross?
Yes.
Gossett-Seidman?
Yes.
Hart?
Yes.
Kilbrew?
Yes, sir.
Lopez?
Yes.
Overdorf?
Yes, sir.
Trunell? That'll be 14 yeas, zero nays.
Thank you. Members, by your vote, House Bill 367 will be reported favorably. I know Representative, move on to your committee. Okay, our next bill is committee substitute, House Bill 1557, Department of Environmental Protection by Water Quality Supply and Treatment Subcommittee, sponsored by Representative Cheney. Representative Cheney, you're recognized. Explain your bill.
Thank you, Chad. Chair. Chair Altman.
That's a mixture of Thad and Chair. Chad, right? Works. Works for me.
Thank you, committee, for hearing my bill and for laughing at my faux pas. Florida's natural resources are the foundation of our state's economy and our way of life as residents. With the support of the governor and the legislature, we have adopted unprecedented levels of funding to support our environment since 2019. Nearly $2.6 billion in state funding has been appropriated to improve water quality and supply. This bill continues in that direction by establishing a new aquatic preserve that encompasses the Christian Jacob Coral Reef ecosystem conservation area, ensures that reclaimed water is treated to minimum nutrient standards entering our waterways, clarifies eligibility for Resilient Florida grant programs, requires facilities within basin management action plans and other restoration areas to provide information that support the development of domestic wastewater treatment plans, creates a program within DEP to expeditiously review enhanced nutrient-reducing technologies, and ensures that DEP has the authority following the transfer of the on-site septic program from the Department of Health to the Department of Environmental Protection. And that is the bill.
Okay, do we have any questions of Representative Cheney? Seeing none. Oh, okay, go ahead.
Hey, Representative Cheney, thanks for having some great discussions back and forth. I really appreciate it, appreciate your time on that. I'm not sure if it's gonna be appropriate to ask you some of these questions or the agency itself, and I know they'll come up at some point, but as we look at the Kristen Jacobs reef area, which again, fully support the establishment of an aquatic reserve there, but I had some questions on that, specifically towards the costs associated with it, and wondering if in fact there's been money that's been allocated looking at turbidity monitoring for beach renourishment. I know that's an issue that happens, you know, adjacent to aquatic preserves. We have to keep that that level basically at zero. I would also say that along with the dredging projects there, if there's been money allocated there. And then the final question would be the public management plan for those areas, if there's been money allocated for the creation of a management plan of that area.
Thank you, Chair Altman. And thank you for that question, Representative. I would refer to the fiscal analysis from the staff, which does not mention anything that you have requested there, that you've questioned. So I will ask if DEP would like to have any comment on that, because that is not, there is a fiscal analysis, but it does not include those specific areas. Chair, is it okay if DEP comes up?
Good afternoon, Adam Blaylock with the Florida Department of Environmental Protection. And just I can look and see for any of the beach nourishment or dredging projects that are been authorized in that area, what funding has gone to that. I don't have that information right here. As far as the monitoring goes, we have existing pretty extensive monitoring through that area. So at this time, not requesting a need for additional funding to continue that effort. And same with doing the management plan. There's, you know, putting together the management plan isn't something that we would need additional staff or resources to do that.
Follow up, please. So, but an aquatic preserve has pretty specific requirements as to turbid discharges versus we don't have that currently. The beach renourishment plans happen at that time, say after storms or other things along those lines, there will be requirements for new beach renourishment. And I know Palm Beach, Broward, this is an extensive area. So you're saying that you don't anticipate any costs associated with that monitoring?
Chair, to be able to implement our programs, no.
And I guess the last thing, so you don't have we're creating a whole new aquatic preserve, but you don't think there's any new public meetings for the management plan or anything like that whatsoever? You think all that's already covered under your budget?
Sure. Yeah, currently right now, as we create that aquatic preserve boundary, we have an aquatic preserve program that will begin. There we have the aquatic preserves adjoining those areas, both going from north into covering the Indian River Lagoon and then south into Biscayne Bay. And as we start putting together and that, there could be future, but for this time and putting together the management plan, it's the Kristen Jacobs ecosystem conservation area has been in existence and we've been putting resources and work to that. Just designating as the aquatic preserve wouldn't add to the work that's ongoing. And in the future, if there is a need to do more resources, then that's something that we can look at.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Cheney. I appreciate you bringing this forward. We're moving the ball forward in a big way as it relates to resiliency here in the state of Florida with this bill. My question for you, I know there was some conversation regarding potentially expanding the scope as it relates to some of these on the resiliency grant side of some of these financially constrained counties, cities that are a little less sophisticated in nature to ensure that they have some of those the support and tools that they need in order to get these grants in. Is that something that's contemplated in this bill? And if not, why?
Chair, thank you. Thank you for the question, Rep. Buchanan. Yes, that is in this bill, and there's a list of communities that have a per capita annual income 75 or less than the state's per capita annual income, which is 26,400 approximately, that were previously ineligible. So we have added that to the list. I think from memory it was like 24. I don't have the time to count them right now. And my concern and questions to staff was, so is there more money for them, or is it the same pie that we're now adding more people to split that same pie? And that's what it is. It's more counties to split the same pie for the resiliency grants. The thought is that they were not qualifying in the past, and they need to. And you know, to build a more resilient Florida, we need all our communities to do that. So this is a way to encourage those that may not be applying for grants because they're fiscally constrained, they don't have the resources. Does that answer your question?
Thank you, Chairman. Tremendous answer. I'm glad to hear that.
Thank you.
Representative Gossett-Seidman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Getting back to the offshore sand and the dredging possibilities. My district has been depleted of offshore sand in all three reefs off of Boca Raton, Southern Delray Beach. There are portions of the county between my district and the island of Palm Beach that might still have offshore sand compatible for dredging. However, those would be a far cry. You're talking 15 miles. So my question remains, if storms were to come through, like we got hit in 05 with Katrina, Rita, and Wilma, and we've had actually tropical storms that were worse than hurricanes, if we have future storms that deplete the beach sand, then is trucking a viable alternative? And if so, I've been informed that's double to triple the price. And so I wondered if this has been addressed with the situation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. If I understand your question correctly, that's not contemplated in this bill. It's not about beach renourishment, unless you're referring to some specific area of the bill. I'm not following you.
Thank you. Well, if we're creating this preserve, then okay. That would preserve the beaches and the offshore sands and the reefs, what's left of them. And so I'm just wondering, sort of a general overview, has that been really addressed? Everything to boats anchoring right on reefs. There's no oversight. So if we preserve it, how do we preserve it against these factors?
Can you clarify your question?
Try again. Yes. This is a preserve, which would the very meaning of the word be we preserve it. We safeguard the sea creatures, the sand, the reefs, everything. If we're safeguarding it and we have storms that remove the sands that could be beach compatible if we renourish the beach, if it removes the beach sands and therefore the habitats for everything from the sea turtles to those deeper off the third reef, how do we retain the preserve or put it back in a condition after a storm to which it was preserved at?
I'd like to call on DEP to answer that.
Thank you, Chair. Nothing in designating of the aquatic preserve would do anything to limit or restrict the capabilities of doing beach renourishment. There's specific authorization within the aquatic preserve statutes to ensure that that is still a authorized use within the preserve. For the coral reef protection, even today there's over 300 mooring buoys within that Kristen Jacobs area, and that's really one of the main things that we'll do, and we have on our website maps and a list of locations where all those are so that we can incentivize people to anchor on those, not on those areas, and, you know, try to reduce any kind of impacts to the reef. And currently there's prohibitions and fines and penalties for anchoring or grounding on the reef. And so one of the things of establishing the aquatic preserve is makes our capability to work with the different agencies like FWC to try to maintain enforcement level and things like that to try to prevent any additional impacts to the reef.
Thank you. Representative Botana.
Thank you, Chair. This will probably be for Mr. Blaylock, speaking out of aquatic preserves. I have a sterile bay aquatic preserve in my district, and we're going through some issues right now with this new aquatic preserve. How's this going to affect working waterfronts with submerged land leases? I know we've chatted about it, but just since you're implementing a new aquatic preserve, how's that going to affect that with businesses that need to work on their docks, or if you have a storm that blows through, because we're going through that problem right now on our coast? If you could just elaborate. And sorry to Rep. Cheney, I didn't talk to you before. So.
Chair. Yeah, and the Kristen Jacobs Aquatic Preserve, because the boundary is limited to seaward of the mean high water line, it's not overlapping any of the intercoastal Back Bay areas where marinas, docks, and those things. As far as like navigational channels going into those areas, those are still authorized within the aquatic preserves, so it won't have the same kind of impact that other aquatic preserves that are within those intercoastal Back Bay areas would have.
Thank you. Okay, I think that is all of our questions. We do have some public testimony. We have Jennifer Ungrew, American Sportsman Fishing, Sports Fishing Association.
Good afternoon. Thank you to the sponsor and to DEP for meeting with us. This is on the aquatic preserve that's getting a little bit of conversation. Our only comment is the underlying statute with regards to aquatic preserves gives the authority to the trust, board of trustees for the trust fund to oversee boating and fishing and swimming. Even all of those have been since moved over to FWC. And so we would just like either some legislative intent that clarifies that that all remains over at FWC and should not be with DEP, and then addressing any of those issues within the management plan that comes out of this aquatic preserve. Thanks.
Thank you. Brett Tubbs, Florida Department of Environmental Protection. Wave in support. Okay. Kate Wesner, wave in support. Okay, great, thank you. Okay, that's the cards. Is there a debate? Seeing no debate, Representative Cheney, you recognize close on the bill.
Thank you, Chair. I suggest that we all take a field trip down to the Kristen Jacobs newly designated ecosystem. And with that, I ask for your favorable support and close.
I think that sounds great. And we need a boat. So if we have any volunteers here on the committee, might come up with a boat.
I know a guy.
Okay. Okay, Representative Cheney, having closed on the bill, Douglas, please call the roll.
Chair Altman?
Yes.
Vice Chair Bell?
Yes.
Ranking Member Chambliss?
Yes.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Black?
Yes.
Botana?
Yes.
Buchanan?
Yes.
Cassell?
Yes.
Cross?
Yes.
Gossett-Seidman?
Yes.
Hart?
Yes.
Kilbrew?
Yes.
Lopez?
Yes.
Overdorf?
Yes.
Trunow? That is 14 yeas, 0 nays.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, members. By your vote, Committee Substitute for House Bill 1557 will be reported favorably. Okay, Representative Costello has been waiting so patiently. House Bill 455, Comprehensive Waste Reduction and Recycling Plan by Representative Costello. You recognize and explain your bill.
Thank you, Chair, Ranking Member, members. In 2008, the legislator set a statewide goal to recycle at least 75% of municipal solid waste by 2020. This legislation, along with legislation passed in 2010, established numerous programs and initiatives to reach said goal and requiring counties to implement local recycling programs. In 2020, in accordance with the prior legislation, the Department of Environmental Protection published the 2020 Recycling Goal Final Report, which outlines various recommendations. HB 455 instructs the Department of Environmental Protection to develop a comprehensive waste reduction and recycling plan based on the recommendations outlined in DEP's 2020 Recycling Goal Final Report. The DEP shall develop a comprehensive plan by 2025 that identifies recycling goals based on a substantial materials management and waste diversion. DEP shall include a three-year plan to implement the following strategies. One, recycling, education, outreach. Evaluate the challenges and benefits of the former state recycling and education grant program and provide recommendations for possible reinstatement. And lastly, develop and promote plans for markets for recycling materials. Upon completion of the plan, provide a report to the President of the Senate and Speaker of the House, including status of the plans and any recommendations for statutory change that would be required to meet goals set forth in the plan. This bill will help Florida move forward, reducing the overall amount of waste produced through diversion of materials from landfill and implementing strategies to increase reuse and recycling. And Mr. Chair, that is the bill.
Okay, thank you, Representative Casello. Are there questions, committee? There are no amendments. We do have a few cards first. Kina Corey, National Waste Recycling Association.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and committee. My name is Kina Corey, and I'm here on behalf of the National Waste and Recycling Association, the Florida chapter. Mr. Chairman, I think you're the last person in the legislature that voted for these original goals and all. So what we're asking this time is let's do it right. It wasn't that we had it wrong the last time. It's just we put out a goal of 75%, and there was no study done to say you can reach that 75% goal. After the law was passed, I was speaking at some national conferences, and they would always go, Kina, where can I get a copy of that study? And I just go, I'm sorry, there's not one. It was a goal, and we actually increased recycling in the state of Florida. We went from about 20 or 30% up to almost 50%. So it did do some good. What we're asking for, and so happy that Representative Casello did this bill, was that now DEP will come back with a plan. We'll have a TAG, which is a technical advisory group. We'll all have input on it. Then we can come back to you and say, here's our plan to move recycling forward, and we might need a couple of statutory changes to make it all happen. So we thank you for your consideration on this bill and hope that you'll give it a favorable vote. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, Jared Grigos, Florida Association of County, waves and support. Great. I think that's it. Okay. Those are our speakers. Is there any debate? Yes, Representative Cassell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know it's confusing because people often get Representative Casello and I confused with one another all the time. I just wanted to thank you for this good bill. If anybody in the House can keep us on track, it's you, sir. So thank you for bringing this good bill.
Thank you, Rep.
Okay. All right. Do we have any other debate? Representative Cross.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Rep. Casello, just wanted to thank you for bringing this forward. I think it's important that we have a study on this and set some goals, because if you don't know where you're going, you're never going to get there. Thanks.
Thank you, Rep. Cross.
All right, is there any other debate? Seeing none, Representative Casello, you're recognized to close on the bill.
Chair, I'm going to waive close on this one.
Okay, waive close. Thank you. Representative Casello, having closed on the bill, Douglas, please call the roll.
Chair Altman?
Yes.
Vice Chair Bell?
Yes.
Ranking Member Chambliss?
Yes.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Black?
Yes.
Botana?
Yes.
Buchanan?
Yes.
Cassell?
Yes.
Cross?
Yes.
Gossett-Seidman?
Yes.
Hart?
Yes.
Kilbrew?
Yes.
Lopez?
Yes.
Overdorf?
Yes, sir.
Trunell? That is 14 yeas, 0 nays.
Okay, members, by your vote, House Bill 455 will be reported favorably. And this concludes our committee agenda.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members.
Thank you. Is there any further business before the committee? Seeing none, Representative Cassell moves that we rise without objection. The meeting is adjourned.